Don Machholtz, and you are listening to Looking Up with Don. This is the Looking Up with Don podcast, episode number 29 for the week of July 22nd, 2020. The related website for this podcast is donmachholz.com. That is spelled donmachholz.com. Two H's. What's up in the sky this week? As our week begins on Wednesday, July 22nd, the moon is a thin crescent in our evening sky, and each evening it grows brighter as it heads south and east, reaching first quarter on July 27th. As the week progresses, the moonlight goes from becoming minor to becoming bothersome as you observe Comet Neowest and other objects in the evening sky. In our evening sky, we have a few comets, and the planets Jupiter and Saturn are now in our southeastern sky, scooting across the sky as the night progresses. The morning sky has no moon, but the bright planet Venus punctuates the eastern sky. And as dawn approaches, that is the constellation Orion just beginning to peek over the eastern horizon, while the Andromeda Galaxy is high in the sky. The planet Mercury hugs the horizon far north of Orion. I will discuss Comet Neowise and the other comets later in the podcast. Suffice to say now and then later, this is our last week to get out there and see the fabulous Comet Neowise, as the comet is dimming and the moon will be taking over the evening sky. This is the best comet in years. Last week, I mentioned the challenge of seeing the major planets, Mercury through Neptune, in both reverse and direct order, since they were all above the horizon at the same time in the early morning hours. I did that on July 18th, beginning with Neptune, then Uranus, Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, Earth, our moon, Venus, and then Mercury rising under a cloud bank low in the east. Then I observed them in reverse order with Mercury, Venus, moon, Earth, and so on through Neptune, which was a little difficult in the twilight sky. We can try that again in 2 years when a similar alignment presents itself. Over the next few decades, there will be other opportunities until about the year 2065. Then Uranus and Neptune get more than about 165 degrees apart, and then for several decades, it will not be possible to see all of the planets above the horizon in dark sky at the same time. Will you be able to see the International Space Station this week? This week we have 5 zones. If you live north of 37 degrees north, the International Space Station will be in your evening sky all week. And in the early part of this week, it will be in both your morning and evening sky. Scotland, Denmark, Nova Scotia, add the International Space Station to your observing list. From 30 through 36 degrees north, it will be in your evening sky beginning midweek and extending through next week. From 30 degrees north through 30 degrees south, you won't be able to see it at all. Okay, so no International Space Station. With the comets and the planets, you probably don't have time for the International Space Station anyway. Heading further south from 30 through 35 degrees south, you can see it in the morning sky for only the first few days of this week. And New Zealand? It's in your morning sky all week long and into next week. To determine where it will be in your sky, go to the website heavens-above.com and enter your location, then click on ISS. Meteor showers. A meteor, sometimes called a shooting star or falling star, is a small rock or pebble which enters the Earth's atmosphere at many miles per second and burns up. Most of them burn up in our atmosphere. Those few that survive are called meteorites. These meteors come from particles left over from comets or spent asteroids. Typically, under dark skies, you can see 2 to 5 meteors per hour in the evening sky and 5 to 10 meteors per hour in the morning sky. These are known as sporadic meteors, kind of like the background. As the Earth goes around the Sun, it encounters paths of those objects, and as we do, we have an increased number of meteors for a few nights. These are called meteor showers, which is a misleading term to many, as the meteors do not usually drop out of the sky, like you're outside in a rain shower or standing under the shower in your bathroom. A meteor shower, and there are hundreds of them, might have only 1 or 2 meteors per hour. The major ones have several dozen per hour. On rare occasions, we can have a meteor outburst or a meteor storm in which 1,000 can be seen per hour. When I first became interested in astronomy at the age of 8, my main curiosity was meteors. At a young age, I learned the dates of the major meteor showers, which are generally the same dates each year. The meteor showers are named after the constellation or star from which these meteors appear to radiate. However, there is no connection between the stars and the meteors. This list is a good thing to memorize. There's 9 of them, and here they are in chronological order. First, the Quadrantids. They are on January 4th. They're seen best in the morning sky, and this shower has a very short peak. Second, we have the Lyrids. They are April 21st, 22nd, and they're visible most of the night. Number 3, we have the Eta Aquariids. That shower occurs May 4th to 5th. It's seen in the morning sky, and these are particles from Halley's Comet on its outbound trip. Number 4, the Delta Aquariids. They peak on July 27th through 28th. Midnight sky, also visible in the morning sky. And this shower is spread out over several weeks. Number 5, perhaps the most popular, is the Perseids. They are August 11th through the 13th, best seen in the morning sky. Number 6 is the Orionids. That shower is October 21st, morning sky. It's also from Halley's Comet. Number 7, the Leonids. Those are on November 17th, morning sky. About every 33 years, it can produce a very intense meteor shower. Number 8 is the Geminids. They are December 13th and 14th in the evening sky, and this shower is known for its bright meteors. And number 9, the Urseids, coming out of the Little Dipper, that is December 22nd in the evening sky. This week, we have one of those meteor showers coming up. It is the Delta Aquariids, more properly known as the Southern Delta Aquariids. Unlike most showers that last only a few nights, this one lasts several weeks. It starts about July 12th and lasts until about August 23rd, with a peak around July 27th, 28th, 29th. The number of meteors you see can be as high as 10 per hour, but it's generally between 2 and 5 meteors per hour. Meteor showers appear to come from what is known as the radiant. This is the area in the sky from which the meteors appear to radiate, like the spokes of a wheel where the spokes go from the hub to the rim, or the ribs of an umbrella where the ribs go outward from the center to the edge of the umbrella. The meteors will not go all the way from the center to the edge. Their paths will generally be shorter. But if you trace the meteor's path backwards, if it is from this shower, it will go back to the radiant. To observe a meteor shower, you don't need to look at the radiant, but 30 to 70 degrees to the side of the radiant. The radiant point generally moves slowly, about a degree a night. But for the most part, it lies between the constellations Aquarius and Capricornus. From the mid-northern latitudes, it rises at evening twilight and is highest in the sky at about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. But with a radiant 16 degrees below the equator, this meteor shower is seen better from the southern hemisphere than the northern hemisphere. With every meteor shower, there is the question, where is our moon? The moon takes a month to go around, covering all the phases, and we prefer that the moon not be in the sky when the meteor shower is active, as the moon brightens the sky so that the faint meteors cannot be seen. Since the meteor showers are about the same date each year, this is predictable. As the moon has a 3-year cycle, in 1 year it will not be in the same sky as a meteor shower, whether morning sky or evening sky. The next year it will be there, but if you wait until after it sets or view before moonrise, you will be fine. The third year, the moon is bright in the sky, competing with the meteors. This year, for the southern delta Aquariids, the moon will be bright in the evening sky, setting shortly after 1 a.m. It sets about 50 minutes later each morning. Moonwise, this is a good year. As the moon goes down in the west, the shower radiant is in the southeast and rising higher. So get out there after moonset to view these meteors. All meteor showers have an object that appears to be the source of the particles. For some, it is easy to identify. For others, it is more difficult. That is because a comet may have one orbit this time around, and next time be in a slightly different orbit, and 100 years from now, be much different. And 1,000 years ago, when it deposited materials along its path that we're going to go through this year, it had even a much different orbit. Add to that the complexity caused when the gravity from the planet Jupiter reshapes the trail of debris left by the comet and shifts the meteor material to a different orbit. Computers and astronomers who study orbital mechanics can run these orbits back to see what comets cause which meteor showers. The southern delta Aquariids seem to be produced by objects associated with a comet that I discovered in 1986. That comet is known as 96P Mockholtz, and that comet seems to have produced two comet groups, an asteroid or two, and 8 meteor showers. Most of those meteor showers are minor ones. This is known as the Mockholtz complex. Look it up, Mockholtz complex. Another theory is that there was once a big comet, possibly the one seen in 1490, and it broke apart, producing the comet that I discovered, the comet groups, the asteroids, and a combination of these resultant parts caused the 8 meteor showers. Little did I know, when I was a young lad learning meteor shower dates, that I would discover a comet that was at least partly responsible for at least two of the major showers that I had memorized. Comets. The position for all five comets mentioned this week are available on podcast 27, Comet Positions. All five comets are also shown on podcast 29, Map 1. Comet Neowise left behind, a trail of hope and joy combined. A celestial gift to humankind to help us through our daily grind. Well, Comet Neowise certainly has put on a good show, the best comet in years, and widely observed. This week, it will continue to climb higher in the northwestern evening sky as it continues to dim. And then we have the moon brightening in the sky as the week progresses. Podcast 29, Map 2, shows the path of Comet Neowise for the next 2 weeks. These next few nights are our last opportunities to see Comet Neowise at its best. It will still continue to be a particularly good comet to observe after the moon leaves the sky in a couple of weeks, but much of the luster will have disappeared. So get out there and see Comet Neowise. It continues to be a naked eye object with two long and impressive tails. Four other comets remain in our evening sky. Comet Lemon, 2019 U6, is at about magnitude 8. Comet Pan-STARRS, 2017 T2, is presently magnitude 10. Comet 2P Encke is magnitude 9 and dimming. And finally, Comet 88P Hall is magnitude 10 and slowly brightening. Not this week, but next week and the week after that. Three comets, Neowise, Lemon, and Pan-STARRS, converge in the northern evening sky, and we will discuss that next week. In the southern sky, in an area between the constellations Scorpius and Sagittarius, we find several Messier objects worth close examination with the unaided eye, and yes, technically all four can be seen with the unaided eye, binoculars, and a telescope. Those objects are open star clusters M6 and M7, and two more objects, M8 and M20, which are also open star clusters but display a lot of nebulosity. All objects are marked on podcast 29, map 3. The moon will be entering this area after this weekend, so try to get out there while this part of the sky is still reasonably dark. These are four objects that we usually show at public star parties. They're real crowd pleasers, especially in dark sky locations. We begin with M6, also known as the Butterfly Cluster. This open star cluster is 1,600 light years away, and it has about 80 members forming the main core of the star cluster. It measures about 30 by 20 arc minutes in size, slightly smaller than the full moon. Most of the stars are young and hot and appear blue, although there is one bright orange star in the cluster. The star pattern looks to some like a butterfly with open wings, and thus the name, the Butterfly Cluster. You might notice the Milky Way dust and gas seems to clear out around M6, allowing the cluster to shine through the darkness. Now we move over to M7, the most southern Messier object. This object is easily visible to the unaided eye, and as you look at it, we're going to compare it to M6. M7 is larger because it is closer. It's about 980 light years away. The individual stars are brighter, and the whole cluster is brighter than M6. It's also larger than M6. To the east of M7, You might notice the background turns darker than the background in the other directions from the cluster. This whole area, especially in binoculars, is a patchwork of light and dark backgrounds. Our next object is 10 degrees north, M8, also known as the Lagoon Nebula. It is both an open star cluster and nebulosity caused by dust and gas in the area. When Charles Messier observed it, he saw both the stars and the nebulosity, but said that in an excellent telescope, the nebulosity would disappear, showing only the stars. He was wrong in this observation. The nebulosity is real, and we do have an open cluster made up of about 100 stars. The cluster is to the east, and the nebulosity is to the west. And please note the dark channel separating the two, which helped to give it the name, the Lagoon Nebula. There is a 6-magnitude star in the nebulosity, and that star energizes the gas, something like a fluorescent light, and this gives it its glow. Now, look for some color here. In larger telescopes gathering more light, some color should be apparent. The whole object is about 5,000 light-years away. But if you look at it carefully, the cluster might appear closer than the nebula, but that's an illusion. Next, we move about 1.5 degrees north to our fourth object of the night, M20, also known as the Trifid Nebula. In binoculars, both M8 and M20 should appear in the same field of view. This is a real treat. M20 is about the same distance from us as M8, that is, about 5,000 light-years. It is called the Trifid Nebula because a couple of dark channels running through it appear to divide it into three parts. My late friend Jerry Ratley, who was an excellent visual observer, used to mention that John Herschel assigned 4 catalog numbers to this nebula. Well, under good conditions, 4 parts can be seen. Charles Messier describes only the star cluster in his description of M20, but in the description of M21, an open star cluster 0.5 degree north, he states the whole area is covered with nebulosity. As it turns out, only M20 has a nebulosity. M21 does not. So here we have it. 2 open star clusters, and 2 more with nebulosity. The whole area deserves observation with the unaided eye, binoculars, and a telescope. There is a lot to see here. Enjoy. There is a rumor that I have the coronavirus. That is not true. I have been tested 5 times for it, and each was negative. I had been in the hospital twice for bronchitis, and that seems to have been treated successfully. Then I was hoarse for a few weeks, and that too seems to have subsided. I am doing well. You have been listening to Looking Up with Don, podcast episode 29 for July 22nd, 2020. I'm Don Machholz. Once again, the related website for this podcast is donmachholz.com. That is spelled donmachholz.com, 2 H's. You can go to that website to get the maps for each podcast. God willing and pod willing, I'll be back next week for another episode of Looking Up with Don. We will discuss what's going on in the sky. We'll continue observations of Comet Neowise and those other comets converging in the evening northern sky. And we will observe more objects in our ever-changing sky. Thank you for listening. See the sky this week. I'll see you next week.